This week on RSBNB Update, Elite Dungeon 2, the Dragonkin Lab, is here, and it's a direct hit for all involved. Learn the combat mechanics, the lore, and the GP per hour as we move through the dungeon. Also, should we be worried about Jagex's new hires and their delve into publishing? This is RSBNB Update, episode 684, recorded Friday, August 17th, 2018. Direct hit, the Dragonkin Lab. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. We're back this week once again with another live video show. If you're watching us live at twitch.tv/RSBNB right now, welcome to all you guys watching this live, warts and all. Thank you for putting up with us through our good thing known as pre-show and, you know, sorting out problems of American internet connections and the like. So, joining us this week, Tanis, you're always here. Good to have you back.
Thank you, Shane. And I don't have warts. I don't know. You might have warts.
The video has
warts.
The video has warts.
Oh, okay. All right.
And also joining us is David, our resident PVM expert. You can see a shot of him on the right hand side of your screen. Welcome, David.
Yeah. Hey, how's it going? I'm excited to be here again.
Yes, it's a fun week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a good week. The dungeon release, I think, went fairly well. There was some things that needed to be fixed right away, but Mod Orion is in charge
of these things. So
yeah, almost immediately, like within 24 hours, basically. So that was pretty smooth.
Yeah, and you know, this is I think deserve the extra delay that they put into it, the extra 2 weeks or 2-3 weeks delay, I guess, that they put into it, a little bit of extra polishing time and whatnot from when it would have initially come out. So
yeah,
I think it was definitely needed. I think everyone felt that it was a lot more polished than it was initially. So that's good. Now, the Dragonkin Laboratory, being the second Elite Dungeon, had a lot to live up to. I think we all remember Elite Dungeon 1, don't we? And how that had mixed reviews going in. Because wasn't it kind of hard?
I don't want to talk about it, Shane.
Just with the way things were and whatnot. So
I was disappointed then, but I was even more disappointed Monday.
Okay.
Because I couldn't go and play with everybody else because ED1 still
was
had
a requirement.
Foot in my,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, that was really odd because they said, you know, you're going to need to complete Temple of Amanishi first. And you didn't do that because you obviously had issues with that first one just based purely on accessibility, which, I mean,
yeah, you know, and that was just the first boss. I actually started watching people doing the last boss. Dude, there's no way. Yeah. There's no way. Like, there's no way I would be able to tell those shadows and all that. I'm like, wow, this is.
And it's not like the first one where you could just eat. You can't out eat constant 5Ks.
No. So yeah, it's kind of a bummer. I mean, I was looking forward to it, but I'm, you know, hey. People are saying nice things, so that's good.
Yeah, definitely is good. And you know, one thing that that we need to mention with this is that you know, people were doing Elite Dungeon 1 before the launch of this, but there's some fine print here that says story mode players will need to complete the Temple of Amanishi again following the release of this update.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely did not have to do that.
So that's fine, but I think people who are doing it for the story mode are doing it in story mode because they want it to be simpler. And you know, because of that, I don't think asking people to complete Temple of Amanishi who did it in story mode to access story mode of the Dragonkin Laboratory is a good thing. They should have that That is perhaps the biggest question regarding this update for me, I think. I mean, it's not necessarily something that we need to, you know, start a write-in campaign about. But this, you know, just completely caught me off guard when I saw this here. How about you guys?
Yeah, I guess they just started counting that day, right? So, I don't know. Must be some kind of...
some kind of back-end engine issue.
So. Yeah, it seems like an engine thing. I'm not sure why they do it otherwise.
Yeah. All right, so you guys ready to dive into to this one, the Dragonkin Laboratory?
Yep. So, make it hurt. Make me cry.
Well, I mean, I don't know if that would happen, but... I mean, it is a nice looking area. I want to start off by saying that and just mention how nice the graphics and visuals look inside this dungeon. And you know, this is really showing NXT off. How was it for you, David? Because I know you had some graphical issues with
VD1. I mean, I always have graphics issues. My like computer can't really run this game at all. It was fine. I liked it a lot. I lowered it to minimum settings, which made it so I couldn't really see some things. But I'm so used to that at this point that it's fine. I have PVN with a completely black screen with nothing but health bars showing, and I just have everything so memorized that I can do fights anyways. Like I think last week, no textures were loading whatsoever. All I saw were ability bars and health bars. I couldn't see the boss. I couldn't see the room or whatever, and I still could do Overago just fine. Just
okay.
By having everything memorized. So all right, I don't really need to see to play.
That's a real pro right there. That's definitely a real pro.
Well, I've been playing this. I play this game too much.
Yeah. So you enter Elite Dungeon 1. There's you know, really. I want to say conventional monsters and NPCs. There's cave slime, red dragons to start off with. These red dragons have around, I want to say, what was it, 40,000 HP, give or take?
Yeah.
So they're definitely a good thing that you could fight if you had a red dragon slayer task or you had a cave slime slayer task. And it's going to get harder as you progress through the dungeon with these. And that's the general theme that we're going to be seeing with Elite Dungeon 1 here, is that it's – whereas, you know, previously I think Elite Dungeon 1 we could say was focused more around the dungeoneering tokens and the dungeoneering XP. This one's focused more around the combat side of it and the combat slayer XP, I think. I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah, I think so. And so you actually get Slayer XP and it counts towards task when you're on task. Is that did you confirm that?
Yes.
Because I didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. That makes sense.
Man, yeah. I had a dragon task this week. I was like, man, I wish I could do this up there because I've done like two or three celestial tasks.
Yeah, that's
I got a
what you can fight
task.
In here.
Like,
black
man.
Dragons. Yep. Yeah. There's also lava strike worms as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kill lava strike worms
chills.
Not in the wilderness.
Yeah, that'd be good.
So lots of fun little things in there that can help you along. And I mean, it's not as though we needed another spot for Celestials, I don't think. But the fact that we do have a place where we can fight lava strike worms without going into the wilderness now is definitely good. So
yeah.
Now, how long did it take you when you were going initially on day one to get your first kill?
Oh, I think I completed my first dungeon within like 25 minutes or so. It was just like the first one where I didn't set an alarm or anything. It wasn't like Solac. I just woke up when I woke up, got online and said, you know, just asked my friend to take me and we didn't really, again, we didn't know many mechanics at first, but we can kind of brute force our way through with just doing a lot of damage and it didn't really matter too much. So probably within half an hour. I didn't die at all on my first run through. I died twice, I think, when I was Shane, which was sad. But yeah, the first time I went through, I didn't die at all.
Yeah, did you guys look at any of the?
Sorry,
did you guys look at any of the mini bosses?
Yeah, I actually went through and killed all the mini bosses. They're just like the mini bosses from Elite Dungeon 1. They're just HP sponges that don't really do anything.
Okay.
You just have to kill them. And they have a lot.
All right.
HP.
Do they give dungeoneering tokens?
They do. It's not as fast as Elite Dungeon 1. I think Elite Dungeon 1 is like 150k tokens an hour or something like that.
150k
so
tokens
it's not
an
as
hour?
Good as that, I don't think.
I thought they nerfed that. I thought they nerfed the 100k.
I don't think so. I went
a couple days ago, it did not feel nerfed to me. We actually, so I, someone actually asked to buy tokens from us. So we sold someone 500K Dungeoneering tokens, and it took us a couple hours.
Good to know, Tanis, eh?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so. I mean we charge, but you know it's like so we do it. But yeah, it's very, very fast. I would say minimum 100K tokens an hour.
All right. So let's talk about the first boss, Astalarn, which is the first celestial dragon that was ever created. So this boss was probably the hardest one of the bunch, right?
Well, I think it was the hardest just at initially because there was the timer with the like black hole and you had to position it in a certain way. But once we figured out where to position it strategically, because basically like, you know, remember the attack sort of how we're getting the constant, was it typeless damage? Like this that's showing up on the screen right there. It turns out that just appears in one of the four quadrants. So if you
basically
place
like
the
a
black
ring,
disc,
like the ring right. Is what you're saying is the typeless damage.
Yeah, and it only appears in one of four different quadrants. And so as long as you place the black circle in between two quadrants where you can move easily from one to the other and not lose out on damage, then that makes it extremely easy. What was happening was like we were placing the circle wherever, and then sometimes when the rain was on top of the circle, you had to pick between doing damage and not getting wrecked. But once we figured out where to place the stuff, it became probably the easiest fight. But I think in terms of like just initially figuring it out, it was kind of hard. Maybe we got through it on our first attempt, I'm pretty sure. Both you and my friend's first time in Elite Dungeon 2, and I don't think I'm pretty sure we got through it fairly easily.
David, just stop transmitting your video because it's hurting your connection. But
okay, yeah, sure.
When you're down doing this, you do need to watch out for these also little pulsar things that just need to be killed. What happens if we don't kill the pulsars?
They just do constant 2Ks, basically, which hurts.
Okay. And now, Tanis, this is where I think you'd have the difficulty in this Elite Dungeon, is that this rain or typeless damage that falls down is blue.
Oh, well, that's fine. So it's not the stuff that's just coming down constantly here. It's
intermittent. It's intermittent.
Yeah, it changes locations.
Yeah, and also the dragon fire.
It doesn't hurt that bad.
Yeah.
Well, if you break it into quadrants, and I had someone on voice, I could probably handle that. If someone was going,
we could definitely get you through this boss.
Yeah,
I feel confident about getting you through this boss.
Then the other,
there's nothing in it that can really kill you. At least not, you know, there's nothing in it that you can't out-eat, basically.
Yeah, that's true. And there's also the wormhole anchor point mechanic. The boss will basically put the wormhole on you, and when that happens, you basically just want to move yourself into melee distance of the boss, because what that does is it moves the wormhole to the boss and damages the boss. So that's also something that is good to do. And, you know, this boss fight went very, very quick. You know, I think I only had four rocktails while doing it. So there really wasn't much to say about this one. This was really, really simple, believe it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was. I've now when I go, most of my food is just now summoning flasks for my Titan. So I don't really need food now.
All right. And, you know, as you move through this past the Astalarn, there's more celestial dragons. So another good place to fight those celestial dragons, which, I mean, you know, I honestly think that this dungeon is going to be very interesting for GP, because this week Jagex tweeted a video where, you know, if you factor in ability codexes and whatnot, apparently Elite Dungeon 2 comes in around 15 mil GP an hour.
Really? Yeah, that sounds exactly right.
Man,
which is a big upgrade from Elite Dungeon 1, which was like 2 mil an hour.
If you're lucky,
they changed the rates for solo, so solo's not quite as bad. But I think maybe 5 mil an hour is Elite Dungeon 1, and arguably it's more difficult.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it is more difficult, actually. Yeah. I think it is more difficult. And it's much longer, too, because the Siryu fight is longer than anything.
And everything in the Dragonkin Laboratory is on one map. So you're just constantly running through different rooms here. So there's not much that you need to do in terms of, changing maps or changing rooms. And, there still is the chest mechanic, so you can teleport between all the different chests and whatnot. So that's good. Just counting here, there's at least, 6 or 7 Celestial Dragons in the part after the first boss, which is absolutely immaculate if you're doing Slayer. You can just run through there.
I feel like I could do this one. Man, I'm bummed.
You want to go this weekend?
I got to get through the first. That's, you know what I mean? Like.
Oh, right. Oh, how could we do that, David?
This one,
you think we could get Tannis through the first?
We could just duo and Tannis can chill outside. And I mean, that's how we sell it, is we just have the buyer just hang out and watch. So, I mean, there's always a way to do it.
Okay. No. Yeah. Well, Tannis, if you're interested, let's look at doing that. Yeah. Because this one definitely seems like it's got good numbers behind it and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and is it increased Slayer XP like per Celestial? Because it looks like they're about...
They have a lot more HP.
Yeah, I was going to say they have like twice the HP.
Black Dragon's in here too.
Yeah, definitely have at least one team member with vulnerability. Just you can use it on everything. It's definitely helpful.
Yeah. This one felt more natural too, I'm going to say, before we get to the second boss, that just, the fact that we're fighting dragons and whatnot and things that have already been on the surface world, it just felt a lot more natural.
All the lore made so much sense. The Elite Dungeon 1 was like total chaos. I had no clue what was happening.
Yeah. We're going to talk about lore a bit after because, I am not going to forget to do that this time. So, that's there. So you basically just at this point run through the dungeon, kill some black dragons, kill some whatever those things that I was saying. What are those things? Strike worms, lava strike worms. There we go.
Yeah.
And then the second boss is perhaps the most interesting one because we missed it the first time because we didn't realize that it was on a bridge. Yet to go over this bridge.
No, we actually did it. We actually did it right. You have to go through all of those black dragons. I figured it out. So we actually did do it right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the second boss is called Viraklith, and he is effectively the first King Black Dragon, or the second King Black Dragon, related to the King Black Dragon. Same thing, around 550k HP. None of this 2.5 million HP that Siryu had. So when you're fighting,
but he didn't really have.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he did, but he didn't.
When you're fighting Viraklith, you'll have these little spires appear, and if your screen starts shaking, that's a good time to run, because if not, you'll get paled by one of the spires and get hurt pretty hard. I think that happened to one of your friends there, David, who was doing this with us.
Yeah, I think they only hit about 3K, so it's not too deadly.
All right.
Not as deadly as this one. Oh, I see. You like ran over and then back.
Yeah. So describe that mechanic that you just saw.
Yeah, so basically you'll get this green, these green dots on the ground. It kind of looks like a target. It's the same thing as Yakamaru's poison, for people familiar with that. Or if you use detonate, it's that same graphic. And everyone needs to go stand on one. And there's 3 eggs. There's poison, shock, and ice. And each set of eggs is immune to a different one. And each team member will get a different thing, poison, shock, or ice. And so you just take it and click on one of the sets of eggs, or maybe you just need to stand on the eggs. I just click on them. That doesn't correspond to the thing. So if you got ice, then don't take it to the ice eggs, because the ice eggs are immune to ice damage. So you take them to either the poison or shock eggs.
If I assume poison eggs, or green.
Right, yeah. Poison or
ice
green.
Or the
it's
blue.
The one in the
– And then
– Yeah. Shock is to the left here.
With the red.
Ice is to the right, I think.
All right. That doesn't matter. So
more color coordinated
exactly,
stuff.
Exactly, Tannis.
Well, it is labeled, though. So it is. Okay. It is, if you hover over it, it'll say immune. So I think, yeah. So you'll see. Okay, yeah. You got it this time. So
yeah.
You got the thing.
Yeah, I did. And then there's the big bar.
And then you get hit 9K
HP, which, you know, it didn't really go too well a few times on that. So I ended up taking that, but you know, the bruise fixed that. But then at some other point through the fight, I did end up getting distracted with this and wasn't able to heal through it. So that was my death. It was the fire cyclones that are about to appear there right now.
Yeah, right there. Yeah.
For those of you guys watching,
and this you just surge away. And
yeah.
Be fine.
See, and what I did there is I tapped the brew key instead of the surge key on my action.
Oh, I see. You signed and died. Ooh.
Yes. So there's
Death's office.
So that's one of the other mechanics that you can do with that. And then you guys were successful in completing that one, and we were able to just move on beyond that. And that's, you know, another good thing about these elite dungeons is that if you die and your teammates manage to finish it, or the boss only has 50k HP left, your teammates can finish it. So.
Yeah.
So that was good. Now the dungeon gets really interesting because you run into the part where there's Onyx dragons, Dragonstone dragons, and Hydrix dragons that you mm-hmm. can fight, which, you know, as with everything else,
does
do have...
that cost you stones?
No.
Nope.
So much for that then, huh?
Yep, you can just go in there and fight them.
They have a lot more HP.
But they've wiped out that achievement diary achievement, and they wiped out the quest achievements from Celestia.
What achievement are you talking about?
Well, I'm just saying, like, because you had to have the Karamja gloves, like, 4 or something to have to teleport to go to where the gemstones were.
Okay.
But if you can just go to this, they're already here. And
there are a lot fewer of them though. So like, it wouldn't be a very efficient way to train Slayer, I don't think, because that's one of the best you know 3 or 4 tasks in the game in terms of XP per hour. It's like over 1 mil Slayer XP an hour, and I you know so I don't think that's gonna replace that in terms of the XP. And you also have to get through the first 2 bosses before you even get to fight them, and they're a limited number.
Right, but you could set your chest so that you were right past that second boss, right? Run through there, and then you would
spot.
Once you kill all of them,
they don't come back.
Oh, okay. I got you. Okay.
I did not know that.
So they won't respawn. No. Okay.
Right. So yeah, maybe you'll get like 10 or 11 kills or something, but then you'll have to go back and redo 2 whole bosses. So.
Okay.
Yeah,
I didn't realize you had to... They were gone once they're gone. Otherwise, that would have been like.
Yeah, that happens for everything. You know, the lava strikes, the celestials, the works.
Okay.
So
cool.
In some ways, that you know compensates for it. So.
Right.
So basically, you know what you do after that is you just basically run through a bunch of these gemstone dragons. You know this part was even relatively simple compared to the first elite dungeon because there was no. Need to, you know, worry or get one hit by, you know, those melee spinners that we had in the first elite dungeon after the second boss. So, you know, this is on an order of simplicity, you know, I'd say probably an order of magnitude or maybe 2 simpler than the first one. And
the death Lotus Rangers too. Those would kill you out of nowhere if you didn't know to watch out for them.
Yeah, so and you know, I think that's kind of where they were going with this in terms of tweaking and tuning it. And here you see we're already at the final boss, the Blackstone Dragon, 650k life points. And you know, this is perhaps the simplest boss fight of the bunch because you know, you see shadows and whatnot, and basically all we're doing at this point is we're just DPSing it down, right? And watching for the spikes that come out as you would normally get with the gemstone dragons. So, you know, not much to say about that. We're going to see the mechanic appear in just a little bit. And okay, so here's the hands that appear. So basically there's 4 black hands that appear worth 80,000 life points each. And basically your entire group just needs to take these down. And when you're taking them down, you do need to watch for the little crawling hand attacks, which are the same thing that Siryu has. And if you're not careful and if you don't watch for that, those can kill you quickly. That was my second death in this elite dungeon. So
Yeah, and if you see those like kind of magic hits come out, the big those here,
there it
is, with the black, you can get a really big resonance off of those. You can resonance about 5K
right
off of them.
And
I think you're gonna die here.
Yeah. So for those of you guys wondering, what do you take for shield to cast resonance and whatnot?
I just take a tier 90 shield, merciless. Okay. Any shield is fine, but a tier 90 shield will give you the maximum possible heal because defensive abilities scale with your shield tier.
Okay, fair enough.
And they're relatively cheap, like maybe 4 mil or something.
Okay. Yeah, so here we are on our second go through the boss fight. This was almost successful, but you guys had a little run through with this that was a little bit surprising at the end. So we'll just jump past the point here. You died. What killed you?
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly. I still don't know what killed me.
Because
just magic hits. Okay. I think it was just magic hits.
Oh, right. Because you said, we can soul split at this point. But
I was like, we can soul split. And then I took two 4.5Ks. And I was like, oh, maybe we can't. So don't soul split that part. You'll just die. You can't out eat 9K on a tick sometimes.
Yeah. So in general, for this boss, you want to keep it on protect magic. And then there's another interesting mechanic that happens on this boss after the hands are taken down, which is the big outburst of dragon fire.
Right.
Now
can skip that now, which is awesome.
All right. So before you say how we can skip that, initially we thought that you could run to a specific corner to hide from it, and that's what caused our death, is we ran to the northwest corner to hide from it, but that didn't work. And what we effectively needed to do was we just needed to evade the whole thing and basically make sure we weren't going to get hit by it. And that was what we did on our successful fight with this.
Yeah, which is pretty easy to it's easy to avoid, yeah.
Yeah. So how do you avoid this dragon fire phase?
So if you'll notice, I'm sure there's you can go to the clip or whatever, but there's basically between the circular flame that he does, the second one, when he starts the second circular flame up until he hits 260K, which is when he gets up and flies.
All right.
There is about a 12-second window where there's an animation of him getting up to fly. He's still doing damage to you and everything like that, but he hasn't become invulnerable yet.
So this is after the circular flame.
Right. And so if you and your teammates can do 260,000 damage in 12 seconds, you can kill it before it's able to take off and fly. It's hard to do that much damage in 12 seconds. That's something like, I don't know what's the math on that. It's something like 450K DPM.
So if you split that apart, 260K, right? And you split that by three people. So you each got to do 86,000 damage in 12 seconds.
Right.
So splitting that apart, that's about 7.2K damage per second.
Yeah, which is about a lot. but basically, if you just use we switch to melee and berserk and use Adren Pod and Sigil and shards, because you could also shatter and you could get a 30K shatter in as well.
Okay.
And also we have all three people were on Titans and we were just spamming Titan specs.
All right. So basically, then you need to hope for the best that you'll be able to put that much damage out.
Okay. Right. And so the timing has to be perfect for it. In terms of when you start your berserk, we are all using max gear with full weapon switches and flanking and tier 92s and everything like that. I'm sure it's possible without that. I haven't tested it because we all have max melee gear. But it was expensive because it's not super feasible to use melee during the rest of the fight because of all the movement that's required. Yeah. So we brought a full mage setup and a full melee setup. Which leaves you with about four inventory slots for food, so you can't really make a mistake. And then I died twice when we were learning how to do this, and both my graves were around 7 mil.
Oh, okay, so those are the screenshots you shared with us.
Yeah, yeah, because of how many weapons I had. Because I had a full magic setup with praisals and flanking switch and a staff, and then a full melee setup with Kopesh's, a flanking Kopesh that's died, a ZGS, and yeah, it's just got really expensive. Seven million GP death. But it was really cool to be able to put up that much damage. I don't know if that's intentional. It's not. I don't think it's a bug or whatever, because you know you just do that amount of damage. And so I'm interested to see if they will change it to make it so he can't die during that, or if it gets capped. But you could skip at least 2 minutes of the fight by doing enough damage quickly, but it requires a decent amount of experience with weapon switching, and because it is a full swap from magic to melee, and it requires you to be able to not use food at all.
So basically, anyone who is doing this is gonna, at the end of the day, either gonna do lots and lots of damage, or you're just gonna have to find a way to evade that fire. And it sounds like
and you probably just die because. Yeah, most teams will evade the fire, because if you don't do enough damage, you're probably going to be dead. Because you're sitting in the middle and getting roasted by a dragon.
All right. Well, after that, it's just a DPS race to finish him if you evade the fire and not do David's method. But that's Elite Dungeon 2, the combat mechanics of it. So a lot simpler, a lot more interactive, and a lot more lucrative than Elite Dungeon 1, I want to say. So, and I think that because of this, it's probably going to be better received by the community, which is good. That's what we want.
I think it's been received super well, generally. Yeah. Like I people seem thrilled for the most part.
Yeah. And you know, that's what I felt going in. It just felt a lot more fulfilling. So
I agree, and plus dragons are so much more fun. Dragons are great.
Yeah,
and they gave us what was promised, which was, you know, a little. It was supposed to be that step between God Wars 2 and next, and that's not what we got the first time.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you know, all around better job.
Yep.
Yeah. I think I would encourage anyone who is struggling with the first one, if you could try to get through it, the second one is so enjoyable and very worth it, especially if you're new to group PVM. I think there's just enough coordination, but there's no relying on someone to perform a specific task. So it's less demanding and stressful for people who are just trying to get into group bossing, because, you know, it's not like you can mess up the kill for your teammates, really. Which is a distinction from this and, say, like Virago or Solak or something, where if you make a mistake, not only do you die, but everyone else dies too.
Which you don't want.
Right. And also the chest mechanic, you know, it's like if you make a mistake on phase 5 of Virago, the entire fight starts from scratch. Whereas here, you can make a mistake and people teleport and it's fine. You just start from the most recent checkpoint.
All right. So you guys will remember that when it came down to Elite Dungeon 1, we forgot to talk about the lore on the podcast, which was just something that Tanis and I, after the show, was like, oops, we forgot to talk about the lore. Well, we're not going to do that today, because I think, you know, you said dragons are a lot more fun, and I think people agree also that the dragon lore is also a lot more fun, and here's why.
Yeah.
Basically, what happens is, you know, I'm going to say that Tycho helped out with this summary, because, you know, he actually went through the dungeon on story mode for the lore, and he is only missing one of the lore books, so he is almost done with the lore on this one to reclaim the Master Questscape. So basically what happens is that the first boss, Astolarn, does indeed drop a lore book, but that lore book is more of a fun, kind of jokey kind of lore book. It doesn't really provide much new insight. It's kind of a little bit of Jagex comedy in there. So there's really not too much you can pull out of that one. The second lore book is where the meat and potatoes are with this. And this lore book effectively has... insight into the research that leads up to the destruction in the of the Stone of Jazz, which we saw in Sliske's endgame, and it describes how the Dragonkin were experimenting on it to find out the that exact nature that they were cursed by with the Elder Gods, and that the Dragonkin must protect the Stone of Jazz. And we saw that in, you know, a number of quests. We saw that in Sliske's endgame, Ritual of the Majorat, One of a Kind, just to name a few. So this kind of expands on that lore from those quests. So if you found those quests interesting, you should probably try and get this second lore book. And it basically says that they were continually experimenting on the curse to try and find a way around it. But obviously, you know, today in today's lorescape of RuneScape, we know that's no longer an issue because the stone was shattered in Sliske's endgame. Spoilers, if you guys heard that. Sorry about that. Now, you know, another thing that came from this is that it was inferred in other quests like Ritual of the Majorat and Hero's Welcome that there are only a small number of Dragonkin left over. But in reality, it kind of infers that there might be more Dragonkin than were initially led on in those quests. And the reasoning behind that is that, you know, they built so much infrastructure around the world of Gilanor, such as, you know, the Brimhaven Dungeon, Daemonheim, the Ancient Cavern, this dungeon, Elite Dungeon 2, and the King and Queen Black Dragon, just to name a few of them. And because of that, it was thought that, oh, they built these and moved on, and now they're almost wiped out, that there's only a few of them left. But in reality, this kind of infers that there might be more than just, you know, the handful, 50 to 100, that were thought to be left over. So that's interesting. And it kind of sets up what people wanted to get more out of quests like Hero's Welcome and whatnot. So the second lore book provides all that hard-hitting information. And the last lore book is put together by gathering those 20 pages that you find in the dungeon. And this talks about the exact experiments that the Dragonkin were embarking on that led to the creation of the first boss, which was the first Celestial Dragon, and Varak Lith, who is related to the King Black Dragon as well. And during this part, when they were doing these experiments, they were still trying to rid themselves of the curse of the Stone of Jazz. And, you know, when they were doing this and they made these dragons, this was thousands of years ago. So obviously that curse has still been broken today, but we're effectively learning what the Dragonkin's mindset was as the world was developing with this. And there's one more thing. Tanis, you remember Pieces of Hate?
Yeah.
And you remember all those other little things that have been inferred on as we've been, you know, receiving little bits and bobs, you know, throughout Zarosian history and whatnot about a certain thing. Hero's Welcome, V, just a couple of those other quests, Kindred Spirits, things that were kind of inferred. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Zautac.
I do. Zaltak. Is that for Harper? Zaltak
again. Okay, so it seems like there have been a million references to this thing. Is this going to be like a real entity that bursts onto the scene at some point? Are they still alive? Are they doing things?
Well, apparently it's some mythical undersea creature in the eastern waters. And it's been referred to in all these quests. And in this last lore journal, it effectively says that the Dragonkin have been in contact with the artifacts of Zautak, which helped create the Blackstone Dragon.
So does that mean Zautak is some kind of a god?
And, you know, that's the kind of thing that people were leaning to, you know, after Pieces of Hate and, you know, general lore things that have been dropped, is that Zautak could indeed be either, you know, some other kind of high tier god like Zaros and whatnot that we haven't heard of yet. But that seems unlikely, given the fact that we just came out of the Third Age storyline. I don't know if they'd want to go that way on this. The other thing is it's just some kind of demigod related to all these Dragonkin style creatures that we've been seeing kind of reminiscings of in all these quests that have been mentioned. So, and
what if it's a sea dragon? That'd
right.
be cool.
And the reason why I think this is interesting, and we didn't talk about this after Elite Dungeon 1, is that if you look at Siriu And if you look at the bosses in Elite Dungeon 1, they do have hints of the sea and some kind of little dragon to them, even if they weren't firing dragon fire in Elite Dungeon 1. I don't know if you got that, David.
Yeah, I mean, in Elite Dungeon 1, definitely. Elite Dungeon 2, though, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, it seems all about fire there, right?
Yeah, yeah. And see, the thing is that there definitely could be a linkage between the Zautak artifacts that were used to create the Blackstone Dragon and the sea stuff that was in Elite Dungeon 1. So we'll have to see what happens in the third one, but there's definitely some interesting potential avenues that things could all be tied together here. So
right. And so are the hands then in the Blackstone Dragon fight supposed to be like the hands of Zautak or something?
Because
someone was telling me something about the hand, because there was this thing on Reddit that I was reading where people were complaining about the hands having such high defense and how you could splash a lot. And then someone was like, well, that's because they're the hands of a god or something like that. So, of course, you're splashing.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but, you know, it's an interesting theory to think about.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, we don't have anything definitive to go on with this, so I'm not going to say, yes, this is indeed the case right now, but it's there. So.
Gotcha.
Overall, I think the lore is shaping up to be interesting on all these, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, before we talk about actual rewards for this dungeon, I think we should just say that GP-wise, probably, what, 10 mil an hour, conservatively?
Yeah, that seems a little lower than it is, but yeah, 10 mil an hour minimum. It's right around Vindicta, Hellweir, Grigorovich, you know, that tier, which seems correct to me.
Okay. All right.
For the difficulty. That seems very fair. You know, a little less than Araxor, maybe the same or slightly more than Godra's Dungeon 2.
All right. And I think that's what people wanted from this.
Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So actual rewards here. You can create elite tectonic armor now. You create this by combining your existing tectonic armor with Draconic Energies and the Stone of Binding, and you get the Draconic Energy by killing the final boss in the Elite Dungeon.
Yep.
So did you get any of those when you were fighting?
Well, I've gotten a lot of scales. It's still kind of cartoonishly expensive to use for anything other than Elite Dungeons, although I'll certainly, once I make a full set, I'll be using it for Elite Dungeons specifically.
Yeah, because right they're not going to degrade in Elite Dungeons.
Right. I'm actually using Animal Core of Saren in Elite Dungeons right now because I was sick of the charge on my drain on Tectonic. And plus, I have a specific perk set up for Elite Dungeons that includes this Crackling 3 Dragon Slayer perk on the same gizmo, which took me way too many attempts to get.
What does Crackling do again?
It zaps your target every 60 seconds for about 3k damage, and then Dragon Slayer is plus 7% damage to all dragons.
Okay.
And so to have them occupying the same perk slot is really nice.
All right. Then, of course, there's the mutated abilities, Mutated Flurry, Fury, and Barge. You said mm-hmm. you got a Codex. Which ability did you get?
I got Fury.
Okay.
And then I also purchased Barge. I'm not going to buy Flurry. I'll just get it. I'll activate it whenever I get it, but I can't see a situation where right. that would ever be an ability that'd be worth using.
Yeah,
but
the other two Flurry are both, does seem a little bit eh.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it just seems like bad destroy. Like at that point, just use destroy. It's better. So yeah. But Barge is very interesting. I don't know exactly what the math is on it yet, but it seems like it has some potential. And then Fury is – the upgraded Fury is not a huge upgrade, but for people who use Revolution, I'm sure it's going to be a game changer because Fury is one of the best abilities you could use, but most people don't cancel their abilities from what I understand.
Right, we talked about that.
Right, on the sort of EOC episode. And so this allows you to gain functionally the same DPS. It's slightly better. It's extremely close. but it, you now can use one of the best abilities in the game and not have to worry about ability canceling, which is great for people who want a more relaxed experience with PVM.
All right. With Mutated Flurry, it damage is increased from 94% to 150%, and each hit of Mutated Flurry will lower the cooldown of Berserk by 1.2 seconds for a total of 4.8 seconds if all hits are cast. Is that interesting to you?
I could see it being potentially extremely good in the right situation. I just don't know what that looks like, because melee rotations, because of the ZGS spec, are so set in stone for me that I would have to either see some math or watch a video or something of someone incorporating this for it to be worth it. But I'm sure it's good if you can figure out how to utilize it, because the Berserk cooldown thing is pretty nice.
Yeah, yeah. All right. For Fury, Mutated Fury is not channeled like its regular version. It's now an instant cast of one hit rather than three smaller hits, and it'll deal up to 157% weapon damage. Mutated Fury will increase the crit chance of your next ability by 10%. And if Mutated Fury crits, then your next ability has 100% chance to crit. So that's, I guess that's what makes that one special, is going for that 100%.
It's especially good with the Grimmjor, because Grimmjor increases the cap on critical hits to 15k, and it sounds like they stack. So expect a lot more 15ks from people using melee.
All right. Barge damage is based on the time since you last attacked your barge target. There will not be any effect on the first attack, since there isn't a time you last attacked. And for each server tick since you last attacked your target, Mutated Barge gets a plus 10% weapon damage on its cap, up to a maximum of 100% plus weapon damage. If you immediately after the global cooldown, this will potentially make Mutated Barge 155% weapon damage ability. And if used after 10 cycles, this will potentially make Mutated Barge a 225% weapon damage ability. And I'm guessing that's fairly substantial. 225.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's a ton. Yeah, it's a ton. It's like an ultimate ability. Yeah, it's huge. Especially in Zerk, 450% weapon
damage.
Is this damage,
the threshold or basic?
Massive. Basic. But the waiting 10 cycles, I don't really see a scenario where you would want to wait that long. It's certainly quite nice for that's a long time. To not be doing damage. It sounds like it has a ton of potential. I just don't know what the math is yet. I know for sure it's going to be very nice for phase 5 Virago when doing bleeds. So that'll be good. I mean, it'll be
Could you combine this with Mutated Fury? To get the 100%
chance
to
get the crit? Yeah, I'm sure you could. I'm guessing. I'm sure you could. That seems like a lot of effort to me, but it's just waiting the 6 seconds. It's just aside from bleeds at Virago, I don't know where you would naturally be waiting like that.
All right.
So that's the only thing. That's the only thing that I am curious about. But it's just, I mean, either, no matter what, it's just a straight up upgrade over Bard. So you should obviously buy it if GP is not a factor for you.
All right. And if you're using Mutated Barge and it's been at least 8 cycles since you last attacked your target, so 4.8 seconds, your next channeled melee ability, so Fury, Assault, Flurry, or Destroy, will act as a damage over time instead. Okay, so it's basically changing all these melee abilities if you decide that you want a Mutated Barge first. And I think people want these ones like Fury, Assault, and whatnot to be damage over time rather than channeled, because I think that's easier to work with, right?
Yeah, it's easier to work with. If you move, then it doesn't cancel it for you. It's good. I don't know if you knew about this, but on the release of Elite Dungeon 1, there was a pretty significant bug with channeled abilities. I'm not sure what they broke, but it was kind of a disaster. It was like when you cast a channeled ability, it would make you immobile for the duration of the ability, unless you did a different ability.
I think I heard about
that one. A lot of people died to the hands because they would asphyx and then they couldn't move away from the hands because asphyxiate immobilized them. which is pretty bad.
Ouch.
Same thing with Assault and Destroys. I had a friend who died several times until realized this. Although Modirine fixed it. It ended up being fine. But that's right. One day we'll get an update that doesn't – where something doesn't just get totally broken like that.
The damage is still sourced from the player rather than placed as a damage over time of the player, so other players won't overwrite each other's damages. That's good. Unlike standard damage over times, these converted damage over times check accuracy for each hit, roll to hit damage and are affected by boosted for each individual hit. Boy, that's an interesting sentence. I don't know what that means.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know all of this stuff sometimes. So I'm not really sure. Well,
to hit damage and are affected by boosted for each individual hit.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It sounds like maybe it's an additive increase or something. Maybe something like that. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, it's a little confusing. These converted dots work slightly different from regular ones, so other players won't overwrite each other's. The channel to dot conversion buff expires if not used after 10 cycles, so it can't be stalled for later. So you got to get the buff and then use it right away. Okay. Also, you're able to pick up the Elite Gorgon Trailblazer outfit if you haven't picked that up already from Dungeoneering. So you'll be able to get tokens in Dungeoneering and the Elite Dungeons to make this. So that's good. And one little thing that if you didn't scroll down to the bottom of the news post that you probably missed, if you talk to Beryl Thought's daughter, near the entrance to this elite dungeon, you'll be able to pick up 3 Dragonkin Laboratory Lucky Charms or 3 Shifting Tomb Reward Enhancers and 5 Vital Spark Drop Enhancers. So everyone will be able to pick this up. And David, I was looking into what these were, and the Dragonkin Lucky Charms increase your chance of getting lucky drops when fighting a boss in the elite dungeon.
Wonderful. Cool. That's great.
Yep. And
now what's this? Was there something with that character on, like, teleporting there or getting there?
Yes. Mata Ryan came through. Everyone whined on Twitter. I don't know how much you two follow PVM Twitter, but basically every Monday we just whine about everything we don't like. And then Mata Ryan fixes it. Shani sees it, shows it to Orion. Orion fixes it. So Orion fixed it. Well, changed it back to the way it was. So now you can use the teleport while in combat, that you could use the chest to teleport while in combat. Yeah, right. It got changed back because Orion's the best.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically, if you don't get what you want, whine harder, and they'll change it.
I don't know if that's a good mentality to be projecting, but all right.
I mean, I'm kind of being facetious because I think a lot of people feel like the PVM community complains a lot.
So that don't work for skillers.
but yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of PVMers who have a lot of Twitter followers and a lot of Twitch viewers and stuff like that, and basically Shani and Orion get absolutely flooded. And Matt K, is he the other person? And of course, Ramen, and whichever one of them did the most recent PVM update, they just basically get spammed on Twitter until changes get made. But they're super responsive. I mean, they're unbelievably responsive. And they'll say if, like, Ramen with Solak changes would say, you know, things that he could get done right away, things that would take him a while. And they're really incredible to interact with, I think.
Yeah,
on the PVM side of things.
Yeah, and see people always complain about the J-mons not being active and whatnot and not responding quick enough. But there's one case right there. So
yeah.
Also, if you're a Gold Premier Club member, you can pick up 5 more lucky charms at the Premier Club Vault, 5 Shifting Tomb Reward Enhancers, and 10 Vital Spark Drop Enhancers.
Okay.
So. Lots of chances to get good stuff. And, you know, I think we should definitely capitalize on that and use that, try and get some rare items out of this. So that's Elite Dungeon 2, folks. I think it's coming out a lot better than it was before.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it looks real nice, and I'm totally jealous.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, that must be that must not feel good to be in that situation where you couldn't get it completed.
It's kind of frustrating. At the same time, you know, it's a busy month where I'm doing a competition, so you know, at least I have that to distract me. But yeah, take me with you guys, please. Take me, somebody, drag me
whenever
drag
you
me
want. All right, so are you guys ready to move on to some patch notes?
Yeah, sure. What did we get?
Yeah, there's not really many patch notes this week, so. We'll just start off with some from the Skill Cape perk update last week. An issue with the Dungeoneering Master Cape and Dungeoneering Boss Selection ignoring level requirements has been fixed. That's interesting. Considering anyone who's wearing that would have 120 Dungeoneering, presumably, unless you had other people in your party, I guess, that weren't 120. So it's fun. Teleporting to the Glacier Cavern via the Master Quest Cape will now correctly apply the Stone of Jazz boost. You know, I think lots of people forget about that, that boost is actually a thing down there. So the Hooded Max Cape will now show activatable perks when worn, and you will no longer be able to infinitely stall adrenaline by using a spell that you do not meet the requirements for. So how does this affect us, David? Or you, rather?
Sorry, what did you say? I missed the last part of that.
You will no longer be able to infinitely stall adrenaline by using a spell that you do not meet the requirements for.
Oh, yeah. So here's what that is. Basically, the place this was most often used was at Araxor. Between the transition between phase 3 and phase 4, you've got some time. And if you used the polypore spell, like polypore strike, is that what it's called?
Yes.
And you basically spammed mage abilities with polypore select as your autocast spell, it would increase your adrenaline even though you weren't actually casting the abilities because you were ineligible to cast it. So you just spam magic abilities in order to increase your adrenaline during that animation. I mean, you could also just do that by dropping a dummy down and building on that. But yeah, that's what that's about.
Okay.
Is you can auto cast polypore strike and then just spam magic abilities and it'll increase your adrenaline by 8% for each one.
So in other words, you can get around this now by using a combat dummy.
Yeah, I mean the former is a bug. It's been a bug for like 3 years.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't know how long has EOC been out? 6 years. It's been a bug for 6 years. They finally fixed it.
Oh. There are a lot of things. Nice, they're getting around to it. Yeah,
you know, they got to it eventually. But yeah, there are all kinds of adrenaline-based stalls and fixes and glitches that people have been exploiting for years. And it's funny to me when people don't hear that they exist until they get patched.
All right. Here's another funny one. Players with certain construction level will no longer disconnect when attempting to enter a player-owned house in Free World.
Okay, sure.
I don't know what construction level that would be, but okay. And Void Knight commendations can now be traded again for XP.
Yeah,
that's good, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, because I mean, that's what people want their Void Knight commendations for.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's the patch notes, everyone. Not too many this week, as it was a full release week. But hey, I think that's okay. We've had lots of patch notes in the week in the weeks leading up. So I mean, we might as well at this point, take advantage of this and just
nice to have a full update. You know,
yeah.
It's been a while.
We were
right?
joking. The last full update prior to this one was Elite Dungeon 1.
Yeah.
So
hopefully we'll have another full update before Elite Dungeon 2.
You mean 3?
Or 3, I mean, yeah, 3.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
All right. So our next little thing is something that you might not have heard of, but was sent in to us by the RR man, and effectively what we got here is a skilling-based survey that Jagex sent out to a bunch of people. So it starts off with the standard questions. What version of RuneScape do you play, or do you not play RuneScape at all for some reason? Then it wants to know, following from that, are you currently a member? And then it's going to suggest some names of various skills and ask you on a rating of 1 to 10 if you would play these skills or not. So some of the skills that are suggested are spellcrafting, animal training, necromancy, merchanting, sailing, archaeology. So of those, which of you guys would you like – would you guys like to play the most?
None. I don't want a skill. Forget okay. it. No, but if you – if you know everyone's going to pick sailing. and they're not going to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, everyone's going to pick sailing because it's the meme, right?
Yeah, and we're going to get archaeology and no one's going to know what to do about it.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to get. We're going to get Fossil Island because – OS already has it, so we'll get it.
Okay. Now, David, which of those to you sound the most interesting?
Archaeology seems fine, I guess. That's already a big theme in this game, is discovering lost artifacts in cities or whatever. I don't think it has to be Fossil Island-based necessarily. I think it could just be, like, uncovering the lost lands in the desert or cities and stuff, and because we already do that sort of, so I think yeah, that could be a, yeah, that could be interesting. Maybe I don't think we need another skill though.
Yep.
All right.
I agree.
Now it expands out beyond that, and it provides the in-house Jagex descriptions of these. Archaeology. Uncover Gilinor's secrets. Travel on expeditions across RuneScape, discovering long-lost treasures, secrets hidden in dangerous tombs and ancient blueprints. Uncover forgotten histories and stumble upon centuries-old mysteries that spur you into action across the world. Head into lost temples, overcome various traps, puzzles, and guardians. Prepare to be chased by boulders with your pockets full of useful artifacts to help you on your adventures. That's archaeology.
Yeah, great. You've described a thieving update.
Or a quest.
Exactly.
Or a quest. But it could
sounds,
just be like
it sounds
a,
like the Morning's End Part 2 dungeon.
Yeah, it could just be either a big quest or just a massive thieving update. I mean, thieving just got a pretty good update, but that's kind of what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I don't want to do puzzles as part of a skill. Like, that that will piss me off if I have to do that.
You know, this, what they could do with this is they could add the level 5 clue scrolls, and this could be that be it. What they're describing is archaeology. That could be level 5 clue scrolls if they ever want to add that.
Agreed.
It doesn't need to be a skill.
Yeah.
And the sounds of these is that they're all elite skills, and I'm still not convinced on the usefulness of elite skills.
I'm not convinced at all, no.
Yeah.
Look how – I mean, it took way too long for invention to even get in a spot where – it's
right.
meaningful, but we don't need anymore.
Well, to be fair, it was meaningful for PVM about 2 weeks into the release once they changed the perks up a bit.
Yeah, but still, do you need an elite skill for that?
No, obviously not. A rework to like crafting would have been
there.
Fine.
You go. There you go.
Yep.
Sailing is described as set sail into the unknown bounds of the seas of Gilinor. Discover islands, map its secrets, and find opportunity by establishing trade routes. But beware of the many dangers that lurk out in the big blue. Upgrade your ships and take on various ocean-based challenges. Pirate ships, sea monsters, and treacherous storms stand between you and infamy. Discover new islands filled with a variety of content and salvage unsunken wrecks. But perhaps most importantly, recover their many treasures.
If I don't get to drive the boat, then I don't care. Like, what?
And, you know, this – if they were going to do this, they should have put this in the Ark in the Eastern Lands. And I really hope the people who are doing the survey don't vote for this because
it doesn't
sailing started
sound...
off as a joke.
Yeah. It doesn't you sound will be... any different than ports already, does it?
No, it's just
does
a
– it really
it's,
sound
it's,
different?
It's just like a first-person version of ports and – you know, do you really need that? And what will people say about the game if a skill that was initially made out to be a joke comes into the game?
Well, then we're going to have to get Jagexa if they do that. If we get sailing, then I want Jagexa.
I want Jagex VR where like you like do fishing by like literally going fishing.
That would be cool.
All right. Animal training. Find and capture and tame wild animals, then train them with various skills to assist your adventuring. Find new pets across the world. Use your existing pets to train together and against other pet trainers. Become stronger and trade for new pets to take part in worldwide pet tournaments. Evolve your animals to their peak and become a master of beasts. Then head out to discover rare and unique creatures. Can you tame them too? You know, this almost sounds like Pokemon.
I would like that. I mean, that sounds kind of fun.
But if you're going to do this, don't make it an elite skill. Rework summoning. There's already a skill that can handle this.
Yeah. Yep. The pouch making skill.
Like, there's nothing that says that you couldn't create something with the summoning skill that would allow you to capture and tame these wild animals. Granted, summoning is, you know, summoning things with some kind of magic or something like that. But there's no reason.
I mean, I think it fits with Hunter to me. Like, to me, it sounds like Hunter.
Right. This would effectively be a cross between summoning and Hunter as the two skills that feed into it. I think.
Yeah, I think you're right, though, Shane. It doesn't need to be an elite skill, but you know, I mean, that's kind of like, I mean, how would we piss half of our player base off and take their capes if we don't make an elite skill? I mean, come on.
Also, I do think that 120s are a lot more fun, and I think the XP curve that was used for invention was particularly successful. So I think that's the one thing I like about the idea of the elite skill, but that doesn't seem to be a thing that is inherent to elite skills. Because, that just seems to be like, I like 120s.
Because there's so many things in the skills in that we've just been reading could be put in any other skill, right? Invention deserved to be on its own because it was initially built as divination plus invention. They would feed into one another. Divination would be gathering, invention would be production. And they could have done that. And, you know, I don't think they needed to put in, you know, all the smithing and crafting requirements on it, because for the longest time, invention was go to the waterfall and fish.
Yeah, I did it before then, though. Like,
I did before it. Then, I did it when it was
fight, do bosses,
yeah,
do Slayer.
I did it at Eretz. I think I did it. I think I was 120 within a week of the skill coming out. I think I was 200 mil in about 2 weeks. Yeah, I just went to Eretz and siphoned my scythe and disassembled a bunch of Barrow's armor.
All right.
And then Eretz got nerfed. It was because like Eretz were so preposterously good that I was very confident they were going to get nerfed, and then they did. So
yeah,
so I did that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up is necromancy. Raise an undead army to do your bidding. Skeletons, zombies, and other dead creatures can be under your command. Learn a series of new spells to communicate with the dead and reanimate long fallen creatures. Perform ancient rituals to bolster your unliving creatures or to provide buffs to you and your friends. Not only this, you'll be able to reanimate dead monsters to learn about them and perhaps resurrect long dead heroes.
No. Not down with that either.
It sounds like a really cool magic update. I don't like make a magic 120. I don't know.
Summoning.
Yeah, I wish they would do something like 120 magic, but you're still damage is still capped at 99. Because obviously, if they like raised your damage and accuracy along with level, it would break the game. But then that interact weirdly with overloads. I don't know, something like that. I guess summoning, just something. I just think that skill should be raised to 120, and content should be filled out between 100 and 120. I think that's so much better.
Yeah, it's better than putting elite skills in.
Yeah, and at this point, so much of the player base I think that the section of the player base who wants a new elite skill and the section of the player base who wants skills to go to 120 overlap. So I think a lot of people don't want either, but I think that people who want one would also want the other, if that makes sense.
I don't want elite skills, but I want skills to go to 120.
I don't know anybody that wants elite.
Popular too. I don't know. That's true. That's true. But I think that at the very least, there's no one who wants elites but doesn't want 120s.
Yeah, I mean, that may be.
I think 120s are the answer for sure.
Necromancy. Key to retconning the Sixth Age. Resurrect long dead heroes. Resurrect Guthix.
Not going to happen.
Maybe not as a god, but resurrect the shell.
As like some sad follower. Guthix follows you. He's just complaint, like, let me go to rest. I hate you.
What about a Rav?
Oh, that could be interesting. I don't know. I'm fine with Guthix being dead. Hot take.
But see, that's what's right here. And perhaps resurrect long dead heroes. Imagine a quest that has a necromancy requirement. That's an interesting idea.
I do like that. Like maybe the V quest part two. But yeah. But where you resurrect V or something. I don't know.
And get the real heroes welcome.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting anecdote, by the way. When I log in and it shows you like what you've been missing, new updates or whatever on the little ribbon in the login screen, I still get try out heroes welcome.
Oh yeah, that thing's been broken for years.
Why?
That's been broken for years. Mm. Next up, merchanting. Establish a growing business empire in town across the world. Invest in goods from across the world. Source special items from boss monsters and then open up your own player-owned shop. Buy up businesses and hire staff to run them. Make decisions on stock and hire NPCs to manage these shops. Ring your shops for as much profit as you can. Merchanting is more than making money. It's about building a trade empire.
I mean, that sounds fun, but doesn't it kind of sounds like what Mod Mark was talking about during his game jam talk?
Yeah, yeah.
Making so that shops could be like viable. A shops.
That could just be a shops update and have it, you know, rotate daily like ports. I don't know why we need to be putting the elite skill lens on all these things.
You know, and the thing that I hate about the whole elite skill discussion is, unfortunately, that's kind of what you like, David. I hate the XP curve. I just that 36 mil for 99. I hate it. I hate the idea. Let 120 be 104 like it is, whatever. But just I hate that new curve. That's one of the most painful things about Invention when it came out. Just I don't know.
Well, I guess I never saw Invention as being a 99. I never considered 99 relevant. To me, it was just a 120 skill. So I was just like, to me, I liked it because 120 was lower than it was otherwise. But I got 200 mil anyway, so I guess it didn't really affect me too much.
But well, that, I mean, yeah, you either when that skill came out though, I mean, you either had to have a lot of money or you had to really know what you were doing at Eretz.
I mean, I just spent a bill, so that's what I do. So, if a new skill came out, I would just spend a bill on whatever the fast method is, and I'd have 200 mil. So I guess for me, it doesn't really matter because I have shards. I'll break them and buy the things.
Yeah, for me, they can keep the elite skills. I don't want it. Want them.
I mean, I'm not a fan of new elite skills anyways, though. So.
All right.
No, I'm not into it.
And, you know, this sounds like the Ferengi skill, so I'll just say that. Moving on to the next one, spellcrafting. Experiment with magic to discover new spells and effects to benefit your adventuring career. Research the history of magical discovery and use this knowledge to bind magic into items to create powerful magical artifacts. Pick a school of magic to master. Discover new runes, build new and crazy spells from different magical components, and become the master of magic and bend its power to your will. This sounds like a combination of rune crafting, magic, and invention, maybe? Or crafting? I don't know.
You know, that one, I have the least amount of confidence that they would get that one right.
Yeah, it sounds like it would be a huge balancing issue.
Yeah, that's a can of worms, I think. That's not necessary. Don't need to open it.
David, thoughts?
Yeah,
I feel like I feel about the same way. This is interesting, I guess, but it sounds like a lot to deal with.
All right. Yeah, like none of these are jumping out at me. I mean, spellcrafting is interesting from the history point of view, but just give us a couple quests on the origins of magic.
Yeah, wasn't there the history making history quest? Yep. Did that ever get expanded further?
Not really, no.
Yeah, just make the next quest of making history. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah, so there's all the options that are available in this little skilling survey that went out to some people. Obviously, a limited survey at this point in time, but I don't know. Nothing on there jumps out. I think they're on the elite skill bandwagon. I would rather we don't do that.
It sounds like all three of us like quests.
Yep. I can't say that I like them, but I think there's a place for them. I've always felt that a quest should be better rewarded, for sure.
Oh, so, definitely.
I mean, I don't know. Well, I don't know what kind of numbers the RR man was putting up this week, but boy, I did not get one of these surveys. So
yep.
He must be doing quite well.
I don't know. Or it could just be random. Could be random.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, so this next one, you know, drew the standard amount of FUD that, you know, comes from the RuneScape community, and the headline here is that ZeniMax and Trion World vets take senior dev jobs at Jagex, and their names are Nick Belioff and what's the other guy's name? Rob Cordero. Nick Belioff and Rob Cordero. Nick Belioff is the SVP of game development. That's the role he's going to be taking on, whereas Rob is going to be taking on, I think his role is in publishing. And both of these guys have worked on game publishing, including games such as The Elder Scrolls Online, City of Heroes, and Guild Wars. So, what... I honestly don't see this as a bad thing. I know the community saw this as a bad thing, but
well, that's because didn't one of them come from a previous company that's notorious for pay to play?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, if that happens, yeah, people are going to worry about that. You know, I mean, I don't think it's completely unfounded. It all depends on what their job is at Jagex. So I don't know. I don't know what that entails.
Yeah, and you know what's ultimately happening with this is that I don't think it's anything that we need to worry about, because they're there to help take the methodology that has made RuneScape and, you know, puts RuneScape updates out each and every week, regardless of if they're patch notes or whatnot, and they want to take that publishing methodology and bring it out into other games. And that's what they say in this article here. So basically here's what Mod Pips, or the CEO, Phil Mansell, had to say about this. Both Nick and Rob were attracted to Jagex by that vision and the scale of our ambition. Nick is recognized as a veteran games development leader and brings experience in MMO games and PC, console, and mobile production. Rob is a passionate technical leader. That's what Rob's going to be taking on, is the technical side of it, with a great track record in building and delivering vast online technical infrastructures and platforms in online gaming. Now, Nick Belioff added onto this, saying that having been involved in online games since 1997, it's been a privilege to work on some of the industry's major online gaming brands, from EverQuest to Rift to Defiance. Now, I'm super excited to join Jagex and the team working on RuneScape, on one of the most iconic online game franchises of the past two decades, and to be part of the leadership group steering its future as we expand our offerings beyond PC to mobile and contribute to our live game publishing offering to partner studios. Now, Rob Cordero says on this is a thoroughly exciting time to be joining the Jagex team and lead its technology strategy as we grow our portfolio of living games, taking the RuneScape franchise multi-format, with the addition of mobile and the production of new IP, all of which will be underpinned by robust and progressive technologies. So
there you go. I mean, these guys... So we see the setup for the new game they're working on, right? They call it a living game, but what I'm most afraid of is that's just a euphemism for games as a service. And if we're going to get squeezed...
Well, we're effectively paying for a game as a service right now. We're paying, you know, $5 to $10 a month, depending on your... On where you come in.
I mean, that's true. If the only positive that I take away with some of that is if they were to do the new one like they like Elder Scrolls is online is set up, that would be good, I think. Because I think that RuneScape's free-to-play model is severely outdated and doesn't really work compared to other models that are out there.
Yeah. So. And, you know, if you look at the new Jagex website, they do have a page now for living games. And here are the five things that define living games. Evergreen design. So this means that crafting the game to stand the test of time, to be expandable without becoming overwhelming or dull.
Okay.
Empowering players. It empowers players to have a real voice in its future, so they have a say in how it's shaped and run. For us, the relationship between our players and our teams is key, whether it's on social channels or in live stream shows. It's about sharing design docs and concept art, so they already do that.
Mm-hmm.
Alive and evolving worlds. Creating a place that's truly active, vibrant, and where there's always something going on. It's about keeping the game fresh, updating it frequently, and delivering new content and experiences to create an exciting and sometimes unpredictable place for players to be. We already have that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's great, and that the way they define it is great, but the way that, what I'm wanting to know, what I'm hearing is, so living game means subscription-based for perpetuity, like forever. It's going to be some kind of subscription, so the next game is going to be a subscription too, and I don't know if that's going to be, I don't know, I mean, is that becoming antiquated?
You know, because modern free-to-play is free-to-play with transactions in the game to buy things. Is that where you're going? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can, you know, in some games you can buy the DLC or the expansions or whatever you want to call it, or you can do a membership, which you would get the whole, you know, the whole thing. But I don't know. I'm really curious to this. I can see why people would be cautious. Like, I totally get it. And what they're describing as a living game, yeah, I mean, that's obviously RS3.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're talking about RS3.
No.
With these, you know what I mean? So, I don't know. We don't have enough information yet. But
no,
it's going to be interesting.
And... you know, there's also another opinion piece on the matter here on this. And, you know, one of the quotes from it is that over the last year or so, people have been talking about the third age of Jagex and how we're trying to transform the company into something a little bit bigger. Jeff Pabst, newcomer, head of third party and partnerships, who is a veteran of NCSoft, Sega, Trion Worlds, and Microsoft. So this is another hire as of last year, Jeff Pabst. Involved in basically transforming and expanding the company. So this is what we don't see is that, you know, we're always focused on the JMods who are building RS updates, but there's been this stuff going on since last year to try and get the company into game publishing. And they said what they want to do is they want to have at least one game running again next year, as in almost launched, and another one announced by this time of year. They effectively want to have two games announced next year by this time that they're publishing. So they said one could be, you know, in beta or maybe even launched. Another one could just be announced with this. So that's the scale that we're looking at here with this.
Because if they're publishing, they're just raking in the money, right? They don't have to do any of the development or anything. They're just like, yeah.
Right. And, you know, another interesting thing with this is that you'll recall that we had a discussion last week about Jagex increasing profits, right? And we said that this could be as a result of trying to, you know, maybe say that they want to sell off the company. But there's actually another reason for that this week if you look at the Jagex website. If you go to jagex.com/partners, the expertise behind $1 billion, the RuneScape franchise. So what they're wanting to do is they're wanting to attract smaller developers to use the same publishing stack that Jagex has used for RuneScape and use that to publish their games. And they're using this $1 billion earned, not necessarily profit, this $1 billion earned to attract people in. So that they could not be – they could be looking to sell. But on the other hand, they could just be looking to increase profits and to increase the money coming in to show that, hey – we're a profitable company. You guys should publish your game with us.
And if they see now, if they were to move more in a publishing way, could we see a day when Jagex sells RuneScape and they just publish because there's more money in publishing?
Right.
Than
and you know, that's probably that would probably be the ultimate end business goal with this.
Oh, well, that sounds awesome.
I mean, I didn't plan for us to go here right now, but I mean, it's the ultimate business goal.
Yeah, well,
interesting.
I'm beginning to understand how the RuneScape Classic players felt last week.
Oh, we'll talk about that.
I'm getting worried. That's. I don't know. But here's the thing. They want to encourage people to do the RuneScape model. Well, the model was subscription-based. I don't think that's the way of the future. That's the way of the past. Like, I don't think that's going to work, especially in a place where you have to be able to be on multiple platforms, multiple versions of the game, offering most of the content for free. I don't think that model is viable in 2018 when it comes to new games. You know,
well, here's
out.
What they're offering. Partner studios will benefit from a proprietary tech platform that integrates partners' titles into Jagex's live operations ecosystem, including player account management, authentication, monetization, virtual currency management, distribution, hosting, and player insight tools.
Does that mean they have to use the same tools? So are all the games going to look like RS?
No, they'll probably still bring their own tech to it. But you know, when it comes to managing the accounts and whatnot, I think they'll go at it from that side.
Oh, and then they're also saying, hey, and we'll also provide you some treasure hunter, you know, because we make some cash.
Yeah. So I mean, so if they wanted to implement microtransactions in their game, they could do that. So.
Why does this give me an uneasy feeling?
Right.
This whole thing gives
me
an uneasy feeling.
You know, I think that looking at it this way, everything that I see is focused around bringing new games into Jagex. I don't think anything will change for us on the RS3 side.
I don't think so either. But RS3 is in such a weird place right now, especially vis-a-vis old school. Because, like, obviously they've got the botting thing, but it seems like, you know, I can just look at my friends list and see, you know, every month a dramatically higher percentage of my friends list of people who are formerly dedicated RS3 players have now switched. And I think Theater of Blood is a big part of that, because right now it's just way more efficient to do Theater of Blood and swap, because Theater of Blood is like 150 mil an hour.
They gotta handle
if
that. That is a problem.
So, like, I have a friend who is one of the best PVMers in the game. A lot of the best RS3 PVMers don't PVM in RS3 anymore because Theater of Blood is 150 mil an hour.
Well,
after you swap,
David,
and so it's inefficient to do anything else.
David,
I haven't made an old school account.
Let's just lay this out here right now and say that's a problem for RS3, a big problem.
Yeah. It's a huge problem. Look at all the stuff you have to do, David, to be proficient at PVM in here. When you go to OS, what you got to do? Flip a prayer.
Yeah, you got to prayer flick and stand in the right spot, basically.
Ooh, yeah. That's real. I mean, yeah. Look, I don't. I'm not hating on anybody that does it.
No, I mean, Lord knows. We should. I mean, I'm going to say this, and you know, the animosity was there when OSRS first came out, and it's one RuneScape community now, and it should be one RuneScape community, and that should be the community manager's jobs of RS3 and Old School. Get together, bring the communities back together, figure out what we have in common, and try and evolve both games to a point where someone who is proficient with RS3 would find interesting stuff in OSRS. And the stuff people like about OSRS, find stuff for them in RS3 and bring them together and fix what started in 2013.
I think David's right too, that there are more players that are moving that direction. Now, yeah, granted, it's a huge botting problem. But players, there are some players that are moving that direction. What I want to see is if you choose to play OS, great. Do it because you're enthusiastic about it. But that's not what's happening. People are playing it because it's more efficient to make the money. And
another big reason is that there's no microtransactions there.
Yeah, Theater of Blood is a more game-breaking increase in GP per hour than Talos was. And Talos was bad. I did not think that 100 mil an hour would ever be eclipsed, but OSRS blew it, you know, absolutely blew the doors off of that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, hey, we have this, like I mentioned earlier, we're having this competition, bunch of prizes. It's all through the work that somebody has put in, you know, doing OS. And they're providing for everybody, you know what I mean? But it's a glaring example of how broken that whole the economies are between the
two
games.
Do we know how hard Theater of Blood is?
I think
how hard can it be?
It's quite difficult to learn, but I think it's probably not harder than the hardest elements of RS3 PBM. That's for sure. Like I think that most of the people who got the first team that got a kills in Theater of Blood was a dedicated OSRS team of PVMers, but most of the people who got started getting consistent Theater of Blood kills were all RS3 PVMers, like My Lord OZ's team. And then if you look at the what's their cape called? It's not Inferno cape. But if you looked at like the first 20 people to get Inferno capes, like 17 out of the top 20 people to get them were RS3 PVMers. Who have Old School alts.
How did we get onto Old School and PVM when we're talking about publishing?
Well, I think it was just about like – well, because it's just about like the future of RS3 and how scary things are sometimes.
Yeah.
That's a good question, Shane. I don't know how
Well, it was
on our mind. It's on our mind. Like, it's been on my mind this week, though.
I'm going to say that I honestly don't think that these two people coming on board is a big issue. If anything, we'll worry when RuneScape gets sold off to some other publisher.
Yeah.
Because it just seems like these guys are coming in to take what was learned with RS3. Maybe refine it a bit just so we don't have any more Menafoses, you know, so we don't have any more Elite Dungeon 2 delays. Refine that side of it and then bring in – expand the corporation out to publishing.
Right. And if that's the case, I think that's great. I think the fear has been that they would be bringing something from these atrocious companies that they worked out for to Jagex. And that we don't want.
Well, remember who's CEO at the end of the day. If that changes, then don't worry. That's going to be the next thing to look at, is if the CEO changes in the next year or so. No. All right, I'm content to leave that there, though that was a good discussion, so hopefully you guys enjoyed
it. Yeah, fair enough. Sorry for derailing.
No, that's good. That's good. That's excellent. So, All right. So I'm going to mention our Patreon page right now because, you know, we do actually have some stuff going on there on the Patreon page that's different this week. So you can find our Patreon page at patreon.com/RSBNB, and we use it to, you know, fund the cost of hosting and the production of RSBNB Update and our website. You guys have been truly great for us. I'll thank some patrons in just a moment. But first, for $1 a month, basically you'll receive a special mention in the show notes each month when the month starts over, and you help us to shoulder that cost of hosting and production for the show. For $3 a month, you'll get a special VIP rank on Discord, a special mention on the podcast at the start of each and every month, and early access to our show notes. And one thing we're actually adding to this tier this week is that we are going to be releasing, starting with this episode, episode 684, high-quality, lossless audio versions of the podcast. Because, you know, Dave put so much effort into producing the intro music for RSBNB Update, but you guys never get to hear it beyond a 64 kilobit MP3, which totally degrades the audio quality of it. So $3 a month patrons can look forward to a lossless version of the podcast, which you'll be able to find at patreon.com/RSBNB. And for $5 a month, you'll get the shout-out every week on the podcast and exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show at the end of the year. And we also do have our new goal, $60 a month. We're currently 83% of the way there. And if we reach that goal of $60 a month, we will live stream one of our weekly RuneScape play sessions each Monday, showcasing the game update of the week. And that's something that Tanis has graciously said that he's going to be taking on with this.
Yeah. So
thank you, Tanis.
Can't wait.
But I think more importantly right now, we have to thank some of our great Patreon supporters. And this week, that's Rory W., Cody T., Nora, Theory, Kyle, and Brock H. Thank you, you guys. Thank you for supporting RSBNB Update. And we hope that this podcast continues to be a source of enjoyment for you and the people around you. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All right. So you guys ready to move on to questions? We got an audio question this week from the RR Man. So let's have a listen to that.
Hey, how's it going? It's the RR Man here. Just so you know, RuneScape Classic is actually already shut down. Yeah, I think we all missed that one. It was over a week ago. But yeah, on the 6th of August, it was shut down. And they actually kept the game going for an extra 2 hours as this player called Titus Furious was trying to go for the Legendscape. Didn't make it in time. And shoot, the mods actually kept the game going. Oh, I thought that was bloody excellent. That was bloody amazing. I watched a few clips on Twitch of the actual of the shutdown. And nearly brought a tear to my eye, to be honest. Because 2003 was when this guy started playing. I'd start playing in 2004. But man, that's a chunk of my life now. And I can imagine his feelings. So I was just wondering, did you guys ever play RuneScape Classic? And, you know, if, for how long? Because I must have come in just after 2 came out or something. But, yeah, what do you? How do you reckon you'll feel on the day that RuneScape actually shuts down? Let's not be
going on this again.
Eventually, as depressing as that is. Anyway, I'm loving these videos, guys. Keep up the great work, and I'll see you next time. Peace out.
Let's actually just first have a look at this clip on Twitch. It's 20 seconds long. It's the final moments of RS Classic here. So basically, you'll see that everyone here is counting down the final 15 seconds till RuneScape Classic disappears forever. And when you look at this, this is you know, a moment in history, because RuneScape Classic is the game that started it all. Obviously, first there was Andrew's Devious Mud, but no one really played that except for a handful of people. And I think RS Classic is really what kickstarted the phenomenon known as RuneScape. And, you know, just to watch these final 15 seconds of the game before it disappears, it was definitely something. Mod Atlas, you can see in here, and all the other JMods and people getting their final quests done, and that's it. RuneScape Classic was gone on August 6th, so. Did you guys watch any of this when it was shutting down?
Nope. Can't say that I did. I mean, I feel bad for people that started, because it would be like I get it, but I never played it that early, so I don't have the same attachments to it.
Yeah. How about you, David? When did you start?
Yeah, I did not watch it. I'm actually going to check. I think around 2003, 2004-ish. Okay. But who's that person in Lumbers you could talk to?
Hans.
Like Hans or something?
Yeah, Hans.
I just talked to him, right?
Yeah. You know, funny story about that is my account was created before membership came in, believe it or not, because they started tracking membership days account age when membership came in, and my start day was the date membership started, February 27th, 2002. I didn't really start playing until 2004, but the account existed on RS Classic before then.
Well, so I've played 5,089 days is how old this account is.
5,089. How many years is that?
13.94 years.
Okay. So,
that puts you
around 2004, 2005.
That sounds about right. And then I've played 435 days, 4 hours, and 27 minutes, which that sounds like, oh, dear. Sounds like a lot. I don't know what other people's are like, but
oh, I can check that. You know, that's actually not that bad, all things considered. I know people who have thousands upon thousands of days.
But like, okay, but if I take like wow, it does seem like a lot though, because more than around 12% of my existence since I created this account has been on the game. Oh dear. I need to find another hobby.
Well, you better be good at it. Shit.
Where did they
put that? I do think I'm reasonably competent. I don't know.
So, yeah, but you know, we started way back then, way back when. Oh, that's something. David, I got credit for killing 2 Blackstone Dragons on my adventurer's log.
Huh, it's classic.
But we killed it once,
right? Same thing was true as Siriu. Like, they're always – yeah, I don't know. That's great. Congratulations. You killed it twice, apparently.
Yeah.
But yes, we only killed it once.
So – you know, I don't know. I never thought of that. And, you know, I'm hoping that if that ever happens, we'll have a sufficient amount of time to, you know, ramp down, because everything we do here is indeed ramped up. And if that would be the case, I'd hope for at least 6 months notice. You know, I think that'd be a good amount of time.
Yeah. I don't see them ever. I can't imagine them shutting this game down.
Well, couldn't they just like package it and like we could buy it just as it exists right now for ourselves?
No, people already do that. It's called private servers.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I mean, I don't care if anyone else is there as long as I have it. I mean,
right, because, you know, there's so many little things you can do that are just relaxing, like going fishing somewhere, right? So even if you had it on your own local instance.
That's one. Exactly.
378 days, 1 hour. Oh, since 2002.
Okay. So that's what I mean. I've played an additional almost 100 days in 4 years less time.
Yeah.
Not good.
To be fair, Shane probably has twice that on Stowe, though, right?
No.
No?
No, no, no.
Really?
I could check that at some point. and, you know, if you look at my Steam profile for Star Trek Online, that's deceptive, because it counts when the launcher is up and you just have it open and you're just sitting there, right? And with Stowe, a lot of the time is also just spent alt-tabbed out, sitting at the exchange trying to figure out what market item to manipulate next.
Yeah, so. Most of my playtime comes in chunks, though. Like, you'll see when a new boss comes out, that's where most of my hours are. Like,
yeah.
I did over 1,000 Angel of Death kills in 3 weeks or something, and that was just, you know, it was obscene. It was like 15 hours a day or something. But like it, you know, so it goes in bursts like that.
Yeah, me too. It's usually when somebody cons me into competing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, you know, I think if RS ever went down, we would have to do, Well, you know, it would be a question. I think I'd ultimately turn it over to the community at that point. Is that do you guys want RSBMB Update to continue as a general gaming podcast? Because we could do that. We certainly have the experience. We have the infrastructure. I'm pretty sure we could head into any game and dominate that if we wanted to, from the podcasting perspective. Or do we just ramp everything down?
Well, most importantly, we have the cojones.
Yeah,
we can do it.
Yeah. Like, you know, you just got to look at the team surrounding RSBNB Update, and we got everything. So it would be really a shame to throw that away. But if RuneScape did ramp down at some point in the future, there are two things I would do. If there was enough time, I would definitely go for 99 farming again, even if it was just, you know, on a standard account, not necessarily an Iron Man. I would do that. And I would insist that we do a all-time RSBNB Update clip show of all the years, and however long that might be, that would be a thing we would do. So those would be my two bucket list items. How about you guys?
I don't know. I'd love I'll stick with you, Shane. I'll do general gaming with you. That's cool.
Okay.
We're good.
All right. How about you, David? What would your last things you'd do on RSB?
God, I don't know. I probably would just stop playing video games. I don't play any other games. I don't say I barely play this game now, but like I'm having less and less time now that I'm transitioning from college to working, and deadlines are more meaningful and stuff, so I might just play games.
Shane, I need to edit mine.
Okay.
On the last day of RuneScape, I'm going to the Makeover Mage and give myself big, huge, pixelated boobs and see how much money I can get from the poor suckers in this community.
Easy.
That's what I'm doing the last day.
How you doing, boys? You like my pixels?
Or you can
if you if you want to if anyone is ever curious why Dyes retain so much money, that Tannis is explaining to us all why.
Oh wow! All right, I don't know if there's anything else left on that question, but I think we got a wide range of answers for it. So thank you, RR Man. If you guys want to send your own in, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com. You can also call or text 571-57BNB, which is 571-572-2632. Or you can also leave us a DM on Twitter at rsbnb. All right. You guys ready for some tech news?
Yeah, we got for us, Shane.
Well, this one's going to be a tale of two Googles. So,
uh-oh.
It's how Google's location data can be used for bad and how Google's location data can be used for good. So this week, AP News broke the story that Google's location history setting in Android does not work as it appears to. So if you disable location settings in Android, you would think that it's not tracking you anywhere you go, right? That's what you would normally think.
We've heard this before.
But the Associated Press investigated, and they revealed that several Google apps and websites store users' location, even if location history is turned off. And of these were Google Maps, the Google app on iOS, Google – basically any Google app that requires location, or Google Search if you have it enabled in your web browser will track your location even if this location history setting is off, and this is an Android setting. So previously the page stated, with location history off, the places you go are no longer stored. But what this would mean is that, you know, even if you went and you queried for the weather in your specific city, oh, it would still ask for your location. Oh, if you were trying to figure out how to get somewhere, it would still ask for your location and store it. So basically, Google was still tracking your data and your location when you asked for something like weather or you opened up a map, even if you had this location setting off. So basically what this meant is that if you turn this off, the phone would just no longer track where you were going at all hours. So there was no way to turn it off, and there was no way to not have Google track you if you were querying for something like weather. And the AP investigation ultimately found that even with location history turned off, Google will store the user's location when, for instance, Google Maps were opened or when Google searches were conducted that were not even related to location. Automated searches of the local weather on some Android phones would also store the location. Google told the AP that they've been updating the explanatory language about location history to make it more consistent and clear across our platforms and help centers. So, and this, of course, contracted in regards to what Google said, that they provide clear descriptions of these tools. And Jonathan Meyer, who is a Princeton University computer scientist, said that basically it's a step in the right direction, but it doesn't fix the underlying confusion that Google created by storing location information in multiple ways. So there was two ways of having distinct control over how the location data was stored in Android. It's just one of them really kind of ignored it. If you want the Google Maps settings or the Google search history to disappear, you need to turn off the setting called Web and App Activity. Google has taken steps to correct this, and they said that, and they are now more clear as to what the actual location settings toggle does. So there we go.
Yeah, just assume if you have a phone in your pocket, someone knows where you're at. That's pretty much the deal.
Yep. Yeah. You know, I don't think iOS users are much better off, because if you search in Google and you tell Safari to that you can use your location, it's going to pull that location in every time. If you have the Google app installed on iOS for the Google feed, it's going to do that too. So you really, if you're on iOS, you need to go into the settings, the global settings, and disable location for those specific applications that you don't want them used. And Android users, unfortunately, just need to be aware of this. Because if they're not, they're going to be tracking this location regardless of where they are. It's kind of depressing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very depressing.
Yeah. I don't know. David, how do you feel about location tracking on phones and like?
Well, for me, it's the, if I let myself worry about it and care, I feel like I'm going to be perpetually in a state of anxiety. So I just always assume that everything that I'm ever doing at all times is being tracked to the greatest extent possible, and that is a fact of modernity.
Do you have a Facebook?
Yeah, I've all the things. I've done nothing to try to stop that from happening. I think it sucks, but I don't think there's much I could do about it anyways, so I've just totally given up and immersed myself in whatever it is, this, you know, whatever this is.
I'm just waiting for the day Facebook comes out and says, oh yeah, you know that thing about we don't listen to your microphones? Yeah, we do. We always have.
Sure, yeah. I don't know. Happen.
Like Google, Apple, Microsoft, they all do that. Like, if I say Xbox on right now, the TV will turn on. And thankfully, I didn't turn my head that direction, or it would have.
Yeah,
but they're always listening for hot words and whatnot. It's just a question of if it's being guarded and whatnot. So you got to hope that Google's got everything right. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is the bad, or this next one might also be bad, depending on how you look at things. So let's just have a little bit of a talk here right now about more location stuff. So the headline is, to catch a robber, the FBI attempted an unprecedented grab for Google location data. You guys see where this is going?
Bullshit. Do they have a warrant?
We'll see about that. Back in March, as it investigated a spat of armed robberies across Portland, Maine, the FBI made an astonishing, unprecedented request to Google. The feds wanted the tech giant to find all users of its services who had been within the vicinity of at least two of those nine robberies. They limited the search to within 30-minute time frames around when the crimes were committed, but the request covered a space of 45 hectares and could have included anyone with an Android or iPhone using Google's tools, not just the suspect and not just Android users, everyone who had one of these devices. So the FBI wanted all this information on affected users, including full names, addresses, and their Google account activity. The feds also wanted the affected users' historical locations. And according to court records, Google did not provide the information, but the cops still found the suspect in the end.
So they didn't need it, number one. They didn't need to trample our Fourth Amendment, if we have a Fourth Amendment.
Remind me what the Fourth Amendment is. I'm not American.
The illegal search and seizure.
Okay.
You are not supposed to just go fishing, just throw a net out there, because guess what? Somebody's guilty of something all the time. Like, you have to go and you get a warrant with a specific place and a specific item that you're looking for. That is bullshit. And they didn't need it anyway. They're being lazy. Lazy asses. Because they caught the guy anyway.
It's just like the whole Edward Snowden trap of sucking in all the data from Facebook, Twitter, and all the others before it was encrypted.
It's wrong. I'm sorry. Like, where's our rights? That's wrong. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how anyone could see that and think that that's okay.
And the reason we're talking about this is because it comes only days after the AP report that we were just talking about that said that Google continued to track people even when they thought they turned tracking features off. So even if you thought you turned tracking features off, and if for some reason Google had complied with this request, everyone basically would have had their data sent to the FBI who was in that area at that specific time, even if they thought they weren't transmitting.
Yeah, and now think about this. This is a little conspiratorially, but think about it. What if you just happen to be in that area, right? Maybe you have a certain kink or something. Hey, maybe you're going to run for office, or you're a political pain in the ass for somebody that's in power. Well, now the FBI has all that information. They know what you're into. They can leak that. They can hurt you. And they didn't need a warrant. Didn't need nothing. Could just do it. Whatever they wanted.
You got to also imagine that at some point there could be someone within Google who has a similar bent like that and wants to leak information on someone to the authorities.
Yep. Yep. It's and no one's doing anything about that whatsoever.
Yeah. So. And, you know, I'd like to think Apple is good on this, but even then it comes down to the user at the end of the day. Like, do you check that checkbox, location data for your camera, for each app that asks for it? Do you guys check that? I mean, I do it for the camera because I want to have all my pictures on a map. But other applications, aside from weather and whatnot, no, you're not getting location data.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, this is one – I don't want to put this too hard on Google and Android. But this is one area where Apple has the advantage in that if you go into your settings, you go into privacy. I think it's called privacy. Where is that? Privacy, the big blue hand in settings, location services. There's one checkbox. You could swap that to off, and your phone will presumably not store your location for any of the applications you have on it if you have an iPhone.
I don't understand why is Google keeping your location information anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I get the advertiser thing. Like, if you are looking on Amazon and you're looking for, you know, whatever you're looking for shopping, okay, I could understand that. It doesn't need to know what your address is and you're sitting in your living room while you're doing it. Like, I don't – to what end? Why were they keeping that anyway?
Like, most – I mean, if you – marketing, though, now relies a lot on that sort of thing, like things like weather patterns, what people do when it's hot outside, what people do when it's cold, whether they're likely to be doing things that involve shopping on their phones or on the internet, when they go to the store, what their travel times are, their work routes, etc. All of those are now a significant part of analytics. I have a friend who just graduated from marketing school, and he just got a job where all he does is map location and weather patterns to figure out how to efficiently market stuff to people based on the temperature and the time of day. That's his job.
Yeah. And you know, with this, it's, you know, and once again, I'm going to play devil's advocate for Google. It's to get ahead of the user's search. It's to know what you want to search for before you know you want to search for it, so that when you type those terms in, it pops it up instantly. That's why they want to know all this data. The more data they have, the faster they can provide that, and the faster they can display those pages with ads on it. So, one final note on this story. It was only the week before this that the FBI stopped its request. They spent 5 months waiting for Google on this. Google did not comply. And if you're watching the video version of the show here, you can find it in the show notes at update.rsmb.com. There's a map here of all the surrounding areas that they wanted the data from. So, pretty, pretty large. Lots of areas where lots of people could have been.
And it's a robbery. They weren't looking for a hostage situation. This wasn't a murder that was going to happen. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this was a robbery. Yeah, it's terrible, but come on. Was anyone, like, in danger with someone's life on the line?
You'd expect that something like this would happen for a national-scale terror attack.
Yeah, I don't know. If they would do it for this, there is no stopping it. They would do it for anything. And you can't trust the way things are nowadays that couldn't be used for political purpose.
Yeah. And according to this, they used standard surveillance methods to track the suspect and get him.
Good old-fashioned police work, huh?
Yep.
It still works.
Yep. So, I think we need a whole new internet that is built around privacy and decentralization, so that we're not having a situation where one person can silence another, where you're constantly being tracked, where you're for sale, that kind of thing. I think we need to be working towards that, but you're not going to get anywhere with the big ones holding all the levers to the platforms you need to make that happen. So.
That's why we need municipal, right?
You need what?
Municipal internet.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be good. This next one is talking about Apple now and their anti-competitive behavior. The Fair Trade Commission is looking into pressure from Apple's App Store to quash Yahoo's game platform that they were going to offer on the App Store. So Japan is investigating allegations that Apple forced Yahoo Japan to pull back a game platform that would compete with the App Store. And of course, we saw similar things like this when Steam or Valve released the Steam Link app for Android and iOS. Apple didn't allow it in the App Store because they saw it as a secondary game publishing platform within the App Store, and that is a no-no according to Apple. So this is another one of those similar cases like this, except this time it is Yahoo. And Yahoo had 52 companies that were agreed to participate in their new platform, including famed role-play game maker Square Enix. So they were planning to bring more than 60 million monthly active users to it as well. But that won't be happening because of Apple's stepping into this and preventing the app from publishing on the App Store.
Isn't it funny how, you know, we're all about capitalism unless someone's competing with your product, and then not so much.
And then use your pressure to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, much for a market there.
And they highlight that, you know, this – now Yahoo, who was previously one of the huge internet giants, is now being hurt by the big four U.S. tech companies, which they are now calling Apple, Google, Facebook, and Amazon. Notice that Microsoft is not in there because Microsoft really doesn't have a foot in this game that is monopolistic anymore today. They did that in the 90s, and they learned from that. So, you know – $80 billion in acquisitions, they say, that these big four companies have spent last year. And when you look at this, this is Facebook acquired apps like Instagram and WhatsApp, while Amazon bought Zappos in 2009 while it was small. So you can see what's happening here. And it's a question of at what point will people step in and realize that, you know, there's a problem, and what was deemed to be, you know, a good internet service back in 2009 when the App Store started has turned into something monopolistic, just like all these other companies have in their various degrees, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone ever will. I mean, the sad thing is the people that realize it the people we're talking to week after week, it seems like we have another story like this. There's not enough of us. Meanwhile, you know, I think people are too distracted with, you know, Instagram and the Kardashians to understand that they're getting screwed left and right.
Yeah, and I mean, at that, we might as well just leave it at this, because I don't think there's much else to say on this except that it's happened once again. It was first Steam, now it's Yahoo. And you don't get much bigger than Yahoo. This one definitely should raise the alert level. So, all right. You guys ready for Skill of the Month update?
Yeah, well, we got Shane.
Okay.
People working away.
Yeah, construction. We have a bit of a two-way race here between Parnassius and Sorensen 57. Currently, Sorensen 57 is in first place with 24 million XP gained. Parnassius is in second with 17.2, and the RMN is in third with 1.5. So, I mean, it's construction. I don't think there's much to jump up and down about with this one, is there?
Well, better them than me. I mean, expensive.
Yeah, the last time I trained construction was on double XP weekend when I got 7 or 8 99s in one weekend. I didn't sleep at all. My hands hurt so bad
after that. Okay. I was just thinking, I'm like, man, they got hit right before double XP with construction.
I played.
Ouch.
Yeah. Ouch.
Well, they'll have to do some fundraising for that, but. All right. Now let's do some achievements of the week right now. So we got a whole boatload of them this week here. So we're going to start us off, Tanis. What do you got?
Okay. Let's see what we have here. Wow. Lots of active people.
A lot.
Shane. I apologize ahead of time. Bard?
I think Varagian Bard.
Varagian Bard. I knew that was going to be rough. Okay, Varagian Bard got 99 construction. Yeah, that was on 16th. And then Alpha Leo got 99 Hunter on the 14th. And Alpha Leo with 99 Slayer on August 14th. And then Darf Marf with 99 Slayer on the 13th.
Nicely done. Moving on from that, we have Marimba with a whole slate of 99s and 120s on August 12th, including 99 Mining, Fletching, Agility, Strength, Smithing, Divination, Magic, 120 Cooking, 120 Mining, 99 Crafting, 99 Slayer, Fishing, Attack, Defense, Prayer, Runecrafting, Cooking, Hunter, Fire Making, Wood Cutting, Herb Lore, Thieving, Farming, Dungeoneering, Construction, Ranged, Constitution, and Summoning. I think that's all the skills.
Well, yeah,
I think so too. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Nicely done. Nicely done. That's a clan quest member, so very well done.
Wonderful. Good job. Well, we've also got Rolladude 540 got 99 agility on the 10th of August. Rolladude 540 also with 99 smithing on the 10th. And Cyanpnir with 99 dungeoneering on August 9th.
Nicely done. Good achievements, everyone. That's what we love about this. This might be my favorite segment of the show, I think. It's always fun to see these and see what everyone's been up to. So. Speaking of that, what do you got for pick of the week, David? I think you said you're going to take pick of the week.
Yeah, so new viral video by the artist Doja Cat, who most people probably have not heard of before this week.
Tanis, you heard of that?
I haven't, but I'm down with the Doja Cat.
D-O-J-A space cat. She has a new video and song out called Moo with 3 O's and an exclamation point. That's basically 4.5 minutes of Cal
related puns and jokes. So if you're into that sort of thing, I would highly recommend it. There's definitely some NSFW elements.
Okay.
But it's pretty good. It doesn't get worse than that, by the way, what you just saw. But yeah, that's one of the things that plays in the background.
Well, I mean, I just don't want to have that on the stream, just in case.
Oh yeah,
you know?
Yeah. No, that's fine. There's some like animated burgers in the background. Let's see.
Is it safe to play the audio of it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I don't know what that is, nor do we want to see too much.
Yeah. There you go.
All right then.
There you go. Yeah. So there's some good bars in there. I think a lot of her other music is a little bit more serious. But yeah, it's great. I'm a big fan. Hold on, let me find something real quickly here.
What are we looking for?
There's a part where she says, got milk, got beef, got steak, got cheese, and then it just keeps just going on and on and on with different cow related references.
Oh boy, what have we come to today on the internet?
But yeah, there you go.
All right,
that's my pick of the week.
Always interesting. Always interesting with you, David, for picks of the week.
He's got his finger on the pulse of the
internet. He certainly
does. You know?
He certainly does. All righty. So what have we been up to on RS, Tanis? What you been doing this week?
Oh, not much. Just picking up some combat pets yesterday. Or a combat pet. I got ranged pet yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Fun. How much?
Gosh. 60-some range mil, I think.
Okay.
Altogether. All right. When I got it. So,
I've been
yeah.
pretty dry for a long while on that, on pets. I think the last one I got was in September of last year for Double XP weekend. So.
Right on. Hoping to pick one of them up this time.
Yeah, that'd be good. All right. Anything else?
No, just been competing. My clan's having a big month-long XP, overall XP competition, and there are like huge prizes involved, so it's even drug the old school boys, well, not old school game, but the older players back like me, and
we're all
in the mix. Yeah,
that's the one with the huge rewards, right?
Yeah, the one I showed you guys.
What if you were able to kill Telos and you went to Telos and you just did that, and then you bought lamps and you did XP that way?
That would be dangerous, but since there's nobody that's probably that good in my clan that doing Telos, we're probably okay with, you know, just the old fashioned grind.
All right.
I don't know. Yeah, that's the problem. We talked about that.
Yeah, we did. We did. We did. We did.
Yeah. All right. I mean, the new meta is do Theater of Blood, transfer your money over, and then buy spins. There are people who are actively doing that because it's so much money that it's just like, nothing in RS3 has ever had that kind of profitability before. And it's ironic because over there they always say like RS3 is dumb because you can make so much money so quickly. But it's like,
well, here we are.
Relative to our economy, you know, when you factor in inflation, there it's actually faster to make money over there than here now.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And I don't even think it's close.
Oh, I mean, we've been there. We talked about this before. So
yeah, exactly.
Earlier on the show. All right. How about you, David? I assume lots of ED2.
I've done a fair amount of ED2. I mostly just do Virago. That's kind of the thing I like doing. I don't do a whole lot else besides that. To be honest, I stopped doing Telos because the money's not as good as it used to be, and I have a friend who needs a Vitalis,
okay.
So we just duo for a couple hours a day. And I like it. It's really relaxing. I could do others. I could do that and eat breakfast. And so I usually wake up in
you
the morning, and make coffee, and I'd do Overago and eat breakfast.
You think you could? You think you could do it on mobile when that comes out?
Oh yeah, definitely. Okay. I think so. I mean, it'd be hard because like not having full manual would hurt my damage. So
you'd probably have better graphics on your phone than your computer.
That's probably true. that's almost certainly true. Yeah, I think my phone has more.
What phone do you have?
iPhone 8.
Okay.
Would do it. I think I have more processing power in my phone than my laptop.
All righty. Well, as for me this week on RS, I said I was going to exploit the PVM people, and I did. I spent the weekend grape farming and gathering some spices and basically sold the soups. I don't know. The soups didn't jump up that much. The sailfish soups didn't jump up that much. I don't think they were needed for this. But the Super Sarah brews definitely sold and were good money this week from the grape farming. So that's good. Can definitely recommend that for anyone who likes to make money from farming. But beyond that, just the ED2 run, did some divination gathering. And we actually had a bit of an RSBNB meetup in real life this week. You guys know King Color or Patrick, who makes you guys all look good on RSBNB Informer, edits all the Informer articles and whatnot. He's actually from the province, one to the west of us here. So he was out here in Alberta this week. So we spent a couple days with him and did some fun stuff.
Right on.
So that is indeed something that we did. And, it's always fun doing that. It adds a new level of dimension to RSBNB, and I'm waiting for the day that someone will say that, hey, I met my significant other and now we're getting married because of your website, but that hasn't happened yet. So.
Never know.
Yep. But with that being said, I think that's it for this episode of Update. You guys have anything else?
No. I will have an announcement next week on the show, so stay tuned.
You didn't tell me about this yet.
I know. I'm throwing it on you, Shane.
Okay.
But it has to do with Double XP weekend.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Yep. I think I know where you're going with this, but we'll talk. All right. David, anything for you?
No, I don't think so. I'm pretty much going to be doing the same thing. I just Virago or real life stuff. So.
Okie dokie then. Well, that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update. Thank you for joining us if you watch live. If you want full show notes, you can find that at update.rsbnb.com. We're also on Twitter at RSBNB, where we post stuff during the week, Informer articles and the like, the Weekly Bite, youtube.com/RSBNB directly for that, and the video version of this podcast if you're listening on audio. And we're in Friends Chat Bits Bytes, of course, where you can chat with us in-game. There's always someone in there who listens to the show or who is a part of this community. So good place to be if you're just looking for someone where to hang out. And also, just a final reminder to Patreon, and thank you to everyone who supports us there. You can find more at patreon.com/RSBNB. That being said, we'll see you next week, everyone. Take care.
See ya.